This episode is also brought to you by Oddmo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby.
Your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
And if it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The Canby City Council last week finalized its sale of the former library property to the Oregon City Brewing Company, which plans to redevelop it as a brew pub, family-friendly arcade, and retail space, despite fierce 11th-hour opposition from a small coalition of local community and business leaders. The city agreed to sell the property, which has sat empty since the library moved to its current digs on Northeast 2nd Avenue, for $500,000 plus a promissory note of $100,000 that would come due if OC Brewing fails to make at least $1 million in improvements. The company has estimated it will cost approximately $2.3 million to renovate the aging structure and execute its vision for the property. The proposal appears to have a broad support from Canby residents on the Canby Current social media posts and in local Facebook groups. But fierce opposition to the move has arisen in recent weeks, led by Peter Hostetler, owner of Equipment Northwest and former vice president of local construction firm KHC Inc., and Tyler Smith, a local attorney and former city councilor. Opponents question the city's selling price, which was about half of the $950,000 the property was appraised at 4 years ago, and well below its asserted value of $1.4 million. And that's for two lots in one for most prime blocks in our entire city, Smith said at a February 17th City Council meeting. I would submit to you that this should have been very disturbing to the public. Hostetler and Smith have also raised questions about the process, claiming that the city may have failed to follow public notice laws and that its negotiations lacked transparency. Both have said they believe the property would have sold at or even above its appraised value had it been listed on commercial real estate marketplaces like LoopNet and CoStar. This on-again, off-again process with no professional, no public marketing, and basically what I think amounts to a sort of secret marketing is not how we should be stewarding or disposing of public property that the taxpayers have paid for, Smith said. Finally, Smith suggested city staff failed to ensure a competitive bidding process by re-engaging with parties that had previously expressed interest in buying it, including Brent Walker and the Canby Clinic, Hostetler and Smith's own firm. What we'd ask is that you hold off on this fire sale. Wait and publicly market this so you can get a fair, open, and transparent competitive market price, Smith said. City leaders countered that the years-long process had included every opportunity for interested parties to submit offers. Speaking as one of two members of the City Council, Chris Bangs said he was satisfied that we did look at a lot of different options and this brought the best value for the city. Value is measured in more than just dollar amounts, he noted. We probably could have made more money if we wanted to sell the building to anyone, but we wanted to sell our downtown, and I think that brings greater value to our town. With the sales finalized, where Smith, Hostetler, and other opponents may go with their challenges is unclear. Asked by The Current whether his clients are considering taking their objections to court, Smith declined to comment. For more coverage and documents related to this story, visit our website, canbyfirst.com. By summer, any Oregonian who wants the COVID-19 vaccine will be able to get one. The governor announced Friday, as long as supplies from the federal government continue as planned. The next stage of vaccine eligibility will begin March 29th, with Oregonians aged 45 to 64 who also have underlying conditions as defined by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention becoming eligible to receive the immunization. Other Oregonians who will become newly eligible that day include seasonally impacted frontline workers, such as migrant farm workers, seafood and agricultural workers, and food line processing workers. Displaced victims of the September 2020 wildfires, wildland firefighters, people living in low income and congregate senior housing, and the homeless. Oregon expects to begin vaccinating all adults aged 45 to 64 no later than June 1st, and all Oregonians 16 and older starting by July 1st at the latest. Until March 29th, the state will continue to vaccinate only Oregon seniors, educators, adults in custody, and any individuals still remaining in Phase 1A, which includes frontline healthcare workers, first responders, and residents and staff at long-term care facilities. While the new vaccine schedule gives us all a reason to breathe a sigh of relief, Governor Kate Brown said Friday, it should also serve as a reminder that the finish line is in sight and we cannot let up. New variants on this virus still threaten our communities. While infection rates continue to plummet here in Oregon and across the country, we are not out of the woods yet. We must continue to make smart choices around the safety measures we know work. Keep wearing your masks, physical distancing, and limiting social gatherings. Cambie, Aurora, and Woodburn Fire Districts have joined forces to welcome former State Fire Marshal Jim Walker to serve as a joint fire and life safety inspector. Walker is filling a new fire inspector position that has been jointly funded under an interagency agreement between the three fire districts. Walker will focus on the completion of fire and life safety inspections at commercial businesses and multifamily residential structures in all three districts, which also includes the cities of Jervis, Barlow, and the Aurora State Airport. Under the terms of the agreement, Walker will spend 40% of his time in both Cambie and Woodburn and 20% in Aurora. The new position will allow current fire marshals at each district to devote more time to new development plan reviews and inspections at critical infrastructures facilities in their districts, including schools, nursing homes, and large industrial complexes. Jim Walker brings with him a plethora of experience and the ability to work with people, said Cambie Fire Chief Jim Davis. Cambie Fire District is experiencing significant growth in the industrial area, mixed with a very robust downtown area. Jim Walker will be working with Division Chief Matt English, who is the chief in charge of community risk reduction. English said he is looking forward to having Walker on board to help the engine company inspection program that the fire districts are developing that uses the statewide provided software for fire inspections. This program will get our crews into buildings for life safety inspections, which also provides familiarization of the facilities for emergency operations, English said. This will help ensure safer and more efficient fire operations. Walker began his fire service career as a wildland firefighter in 1981. He has served at both local and state levels, including 5 years of experience with the Oregon Department of Forestry managing their statewide fire operations. For the past 11 years, Walker has served at the Office of State Fire Marshal, where he directed the agency's fire programs, including code development and enforcement, fire investigation, fire data collection and analysis, fire safety education and information, and regulations on the fireworks, explosives, propane, and non-retail gasoline dispensing industries. Walker stepped down as state fire marshal last September after being placed on leave hours after the outbreak of the wildfires that burned hundreds of thousands of acres in Clackamas, Marion, and Polk counties. It was later revealed that he had been under investigation as to whether he had proper authorization to enter the Beachy Creek wildfire zone to assist in the search for missing people. Walker said in a press release that he is ready to get started in his new role. As his swearing-in ceremony Wednesday, Walker said, quote, "I am excited about the opportunity to build a program that will serve all three districts in a way that will make a real difference in the safety of the communities that we serve." The CEO of Portland General Electric this week committed $75,000 to nonprofits in Clackamas County who are serving the most vulnerable during the historic winter event and widespread power outages. Rural Clackamas County was the hardest hit area during the once-in-a-lifetime century ice storm that devastated PGE's overhead lines and other systems, with more than 6,000 residents still without power as of Friday, though many of those were due to new outages that occurred the previous night. Of the 420,000 customers who lost power during the Valentine's Day storms, 144,000 were Clackamas Countyans. Nearly a quarter of those affected experienced multiple outages. On Thursday, the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners requested an update from PGE CEO Maria Pope at their regular business meetings. In addition to giving an overview of PGE's response efforts, Pope committed $75,000 in funding from PGE and the PGE Foundation to county nonprofits for storm recovery. PGE and the county will work together to get funds to the places where there is the most need, a press release said. PGE is an outstanding community partner to Clackamas County and has proven that again today, said County Chair Tootie Smith. "They heard us and pledged not only to keep our most vulnerable neighbors with services, but to meet with us on a monthly basis to strengthen our response to future disruptive events and to create better safeguards in our systems." Pope said this winter storm event required the largest restoration effort in PGE's history and that Clackamas County was at the epicenter of the damage caused by an ice and wind combination that devastated the area. Overall, PGE and the PGE Foundation plan to donate a total of $225,000 to help communities with storm recovery, including the $75,000 dedicated to Clackamas County. Those hardest hit by the COVID-19 pandemic, the wildfires last fall, and the recent winter storm may also be eligible for PGE's bill assistance programs. For more information on bill assistance programs, call PGE Customer Service at 503-228-6322 or 800-542-8818, or just visit PGE's website at portlandgeneral.com. Now Hear This Sports is brought to you by Rife and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456.
The good news? The Cougars are back, baby. The bad news? For the time being, we'll have to watch from home. The Three Rivers League announced this week that only certified coaches, athletes, and approved event personnel will be allowed to attend contests in person. And the rule will be strictly enforced according to the TRL. If unauthorized persons attend a competition, play will be suspended until that individual leaves the premises. The statement, which was signed by the principals of the 8 TRL schools, including Greg Dintz of Canby, said the decision was based on the input of administrators, coaches, and other staff after reviewing the latest guidance from the governor, OHA, and OSAA. In most cases, even optimistic projections for the risk levels for Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties provide hard ceilings for attendance numbers that are restrictive enough to make it difficult for schools to run events with the normal number of event personnel, coaches, and athletes, the statement said. Including spectators has proven prohibitive for a number of reasons. Saying they understand the importance of allowing families, friends, and fans to watch as many contests as possible, the TRL principal said member schools are working in partnership with the NFHS network to stream all varsity contests. Athletic directors for each school will be posting links to their broadcasts on their school's schedules on the OSAA website. Fans may search the NFHS network to find archived games as well as scheduled live streams. "We know it will not be the same without friends and family in the stands this spring," the statement said. Still, we understand how important it is to provide this opportunity for our student-athletes to dare greatly and in the face of adversity of the past 12 months, regardless of what precautions we must take to make it happen. Many doubted we would be able to arrive at this point. We appreciate the support it took to get here and thank the athletes, parents, and coaches who made it possible. The NFHS broadcasts will be facilitated by a new technology, the Pixalot, a fully automatic sports camera that will be stationed at Cougar Stadium and the main gym and works without an operator. Canby's home contest will be live stream free, but users will be required to pay a fee to watch away games or other teams' contests, $10.99 monthly or $69.99 for a full year. The Canby Cougar football team will kick off its abbreviated six-game regular season at 7 p.m. on Saturday at home against the Clackamas Cavaliers. Canby volleyball will host Tualatin Wednesday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. The boys' soccer team will also kick off its season at 7 p.m. that night, hosting Gresham at Cougar Stadium. The girls' soccer team's first game will be on the road against Sherwood, with kickoff at 7:15 p.m. Friday, March 5th. And finally, the boys' and girls' cross-country teams host their first meet at home, Wednesday, March 3rd, with Oregon City and Westland.
Stay connected to what matters most this winter with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While things may look a little different this year, as we all work together to keep everyone as safe and healthy as possible, you can be confident that DirectLink's reliable network will keep your video calls, Snapchats, stories, and photos crystal clear and at your fingertips whenever you need them. In 2021, DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. Okay, well, you've probably heard a lot about things that are historical and unprecedented in the news of late with regard to ice storms and wildfires and pandemics. But joining us on the Canby Conversation today, again, is the owner of a real piece of local history, Amy Lenhart. Hi, Amy.
Hi there.
She is. She and her husband Daryl are the owners of the Whiskey Hill store, the original 91 school back when it was known as just a Whiskey Hill school, and they are working hard to restore that historical building and make it a store again. How are you guys holding up? You got your power back on and everything, living the life with heat and lights and everything.
Well, really, we've been camping for 8 months.
Right.
So, for us, the store, the ice storm was, you know, scary, but it was just kind of a little blip for us.
Right.
The only thing that it was the water, you know, but.
You guys are probably on a well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were never without heat and lights. We were conserving because we didn't know how long our propane would last. But we had it way better than about 99% of the people, I think, because we were living in a self-contained RV already.
Right. And I think you call it like the camper of love or something. You got that RV. We should just explain to people when you say camping, you are living at that RV as you work basically daily to renovate and restore the historic store.
Yeah, I call it the Love Shack.
Love Shack. Excuse me. Please forgive me.
Daryl hates that.
Okay. Well, he's not here, so.
Right. Well, his the people that he works with on the East Coast, they call it the command center.
I like that. That makes me think of like Avengers and Star Wars.
They're military people, so yeah. That's where they're coming from. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about, you know, we've checked in obviously throughout this storm. Fortunately, most folks are back online now. Our heart goes out to those that are still suffering. But we've checked in obviously with Canby, told lots of stories from there, Aurora, but the Whiskey Hill community is small, but very tight knit community that surrounds the 91 school, is very rural, doesn't have a lot of services, doesn't have a store until you guys are back online, right? I understand was obviously very hard hit by the storm and the outages, and really came together. I'd love to just hear kind of your perspective overview, but maybe from beginning to end, tell us about how things went out there.
Well, like everyone, that first night we could hear, you know, the trees exploding as their branches fell, and it was just a crazy night. And when we got up in the morning, we noticed there was quite a bit of traffic at the corner. And people were like in our parking lot quite a bit, so you know, we kind of hopped up to see what was going on. And as we talked to people that were coming through, we learned that basically every road was blocked by trees.
So
people were trying to go to all of the roads to see, could they get off Whiskey Hill? So Whiskey Hill Road, heading toward Hubbard, was just right by us where we could see, was blocked by multiple very large trees that were down and multiple power lines down.
Okay.
And then Meridian Road, north of us and south of us, blocked by multiple trees, poles across the road, lines down.
Wow.
And then Whiskey Hill Road heading toward Canby, our neighbors had a bunch of stuff fall, but you could go into the 91 school parking lot to get around that. But I think that further down there were trees, smaller trees across the road. So, it was very busy on this corner, and you could hear chainsaws going. So immediately, one thing about being out in the country is everyone's got tools and tractors.
Right, and so, knows how to use them.
Right, and so there were chainsaws going, and there were tractors pulling trees off, and so PGE showed up right away, which was really exciting. But
wow,
They just blocked off a road and.
Oh, okay. Were they lost or no? I'm just kidding.
I don't know. I think they were assessing.
Okay. Good. Good. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
They blocked off the road and then they left. That was the first that Saturday morning, the 13th. And,
yeah.
I talked to them and they said, "Oh well, we're going to start in Hubbard and work our way out." And I'm like, "Wow, that's amazing." Well, that isn't how it played out at all.
Yeah.
But they blocked that road off. And so there was this young man from down the street who he told them that he would kind of divert traffic and answer questions. So he was out there in the freezing cold for hours. I took him hot cocoa. And then I guess his mom must have brought him some lunch. But then he kind of just gave up, because what happened was people just moved the barricades and the cones. And just started, you know, they chainsawed the trees and they were just driving over the lines. It's like, they're down, they're not sparking, we're going to drive over them.
Yeah.
And then both directions, people north on Meridian, that never really got cleared up until, I don't know, it was several days. But it was crazy. Out here, there were hundreds of cars, people driving around.
Mm-hmm.
People were stopping to ask us, "Do you have any supplies?" And you know, we didn't. As a store, we had, you know, what we have,
right.
But we don't have gasoline, we don't have propane, and that's what people were looking
for. Oh my gosh, that's heartbreaking.
But very quickly, neighbors were out. Chainsaws were going all over the neighborhood as soon as we realized that, you know, branches were hopefully done falling. There was a neighbor right here on the corner. He had an extra, well, I think someone brought him an extra generator, and he was wheeling his generator from house to house with the wire supplies to hook that generator up to their well pumps, or to their well pumps, in order to get water back into their reserve tanks and build up the pressure. And fill their hot water. Well, I don't know if anyone ever got hot water heaters going, but at least they had water. And he was just wheeling the generator around. And,
that's amazing.
Yeah, and then he borrowed a track hoe from a friend of his, I guess, who lives on 211, but I think he just has a lot of big toys. And he was working on everyone's yards with a track hoe, and he took load after load after load into Woodburn, and he was amazing. He was just doing his thing.
Wow. I know that 91 School was sort of a staging ground for distribution of supplies. I know you were very involved, Amy, you and Daryl, in collecting water and food and kind of getting those basic necessities out to people at some point. And the community really came together in that way as well.
Yeah. We were able to help, but the real heroes in that was the real, I think the real true number one hero is named Nikki Rodolph, and she's the
that's what I heard as well,
the principal's wife at 91. Now Skylar, the principal, definitely was in on that, and I mean they were here that Friday after the storm, so it would have been like the 19th or 20th or something like that, and they were at the school, and I said, is there anything I can do to help? And they said, well, we're trying to get together this kind of a disaster relief event, but we don't know if it's going to happen. And so that was Friday, and then Saturday morning I got up and there was a thing on Facebook saying, you know, come to the school at noon. And that's when I just kind of took advantage of our Facebook platform and sent a message out. And I know that people from our group brought wood and brought food. And that day they handed out, I think around, I think, was it 50 or 70 boxes? It was a lot of food, and then gallons of water and loads of wood, and then later that day they said basically they ran out of supplies, and they gave it out until they didn't have any more, and then they said, because they were doing a homework packet pickup on Monday because they weren't able to start school back like the others were,
right?
So they took advantage of that to hand out even more supplies. So our little group had over $500 donated in that 48 hours. And so I went out with my cousin, Kim, Lenhart Beavers, and we did some shopping on that Monday and brought back a bunch of stuff. And by that point, we had water. So we were refilling water. And It was definitely a community event. Richard Krupp lives right down the street, and he must have a connection to the Red Cross because he showed up with blankets, and the Canby Center was out here with stuff. And I think there were a couple of churches. And then I know a church in Wilsonville donated enough food for 50 food boxes.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, we just want to shout out real quick, Daryl Linhart, able to join us. Hi, Daryl. Welcome back on to Now Here This Can Be. Obviously, just talking about the little storm we just had. And I'm curious to hear from both of you guys. I know you're from this community, went to the through the 91 school, and families go back, especially for you, Daryl, generations out there. I'm curious, and you guys are very interested in the history. I know that's something that really ties your community together. Did you hear from people the sense that this was something they've never experienced before, that this felt very historical, or because you guys are maybe a little more self-reliant and whatnot out there, that it obviously was inconvenient or unpleasant at times, but you felt a little more like, we got this?
I wouldn't say people just have a cavalier attitude like, oh, we got it.
Yeah.
Easy. It's, I say most people that are like our age or younger, it was like, wow, we've not experienced anything like this before.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think hearing from, well, I think my dad mentioned something along the lines of experiencing something like this way back when he was like a teenager.
Yeah.
And he's 89. So,
right. Would that have been during the Columbus Day storm maybe? And I think that was the 60s?
No. Way before that.
Oh, no. Okay.
He was talking
like in the 40s.
1949.
Oh, wow.
Time frame.
Okay.
Having a massive storm like this that took a lot of things, you know, damaged a lot of trees. And, you know, at that time, electrification wasn't as extensive. I mean, shoot, he remembers this area getting electrified when he was a kid. I think he was like 10 years old or something like that when they finally got power out here. Yeah. So, even if people did remember, it just, we're so much more reliant on electricity now.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And really there's so many people with livestock.
Yeah.
That's the thing is,
yeah.
I mean, my heart just went out to people. We have neighbors right down the road. They just moved out here a year ago from Portland. So, and they're like embracing the farm lifestyle, and they had one generator and they were dragging it back and forth from their house to have light and a little bit of heat out to the barn to be able to power a well out there to get water to their, I don't know, dozens of animals.
Sure.
And we just talked to someone. Well, it was Mallory Gwynn. They just got power last night.
Wow.
And full 2 weeks. And he lives out here down the road from us, and he was hauling water.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I just yeah. it was rough.
Yeah. And I think people understand that better out here than somebody, pick on people that live in town. But if all you do is live on a city lot your whole life, you just don't have an appreciation of what it means to have a piece of land and animals and things like that. And when systems don't work, just how labor intensive it is. And I think people around here do get it. And I think that's why people wanted to turn out and help as much as they could. I mean, they understand some people it's economic, some people it's just pure, you know, the stress level they were under, that people wanted to help wherever they could.
Yeah.
It was really cool to see people, because you kind of mentioned this, people who have been out here for a long time. Several of the families or the people who are out here who are retired and they've lived out here their whole lives were very generous in helping because they do, you know, they have lived out in the country and they, you know, they have the, I don't know if it's the resilience or just the resources. They know how to kind of do things. They realize the importance of having that generator and all that. And so they were really very generous. And I would like to mention just the staff of 91 as well.
Yeah.
That we have staff members who said, I can't get out there, but they were donating because they, you know, I want to be able to help and this is the only way I can help. And they donated. And so we were able to get things and bring them in on their behalf. So that was really amazing. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Amy, you have been really great, as you mentioned, with the Whiskey Hill community and Facebook page, kind of keeping people informed, trying to route people to resources as best you can. You had a lot of posts that that first day, and I don't think the juice got turned on yet that first day, but when the crews kind of came back, I guess they were out there that first day, but the first day they came back about a week or so later and started putting poles back up and whatnot. Can you describe that feeling of kind of seeing the cavalry come over the hill?
Oh my gosh. It definitely, I felt, it was like, I think it's like the beaches of Normandy. They're like, they're here, you know? almost just want to fall at their feet, but then you don't want to stop them working. So I had bought a couple packages of cookies when I had them waiting in my fairly cold refrigerator outside. I mean, they'd only been there a couple days, but I grabbed them and I ran over to them. Look, I've been saving these for you.
Wow.
But then, like, I think three different people came out during the day. Those linemen, they may have gained weight in this process. Because we had people knock on our door one night with coffee. And anyway, it was an amazing feeling to see them. Because so I have a friend who is a lineman. He's been a lineman with PGE for 40 years. And he needs to retire, but he actually loves his and he loves these storms, but for 40 years.
That makes one of us, right?
Yeah. He loves to help. That's
yeah.
He
yeah.
loves to help people.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
So every storm, when you hear, oh, the linemen are out, he's been out in for all of their married life. So that means that he leaves his wife at home in the dark, and they have a wood insert just because of he knows how this is. His whole property with trees down all over it, his road blocked, and he was leaving at 6 a.m. and getting home at midnight. And he did that all the way through. I think maybe he's back to regular schedule now. So when they showed up, you know, it's like, wow, I know how hard these guys have been working. They were from out of state. They stay, and they were happy. They were all just happy.
Yeah.
Everyone's driving by and honking and waving. And
yeah,
it's a great feeling to see the poles come and the poles come up and the transformers. And oh my goodness. It was something else.
We had such the same experience, and I just think that was something that was so amazing. Not just that they put in the hours with the challenging conditions, the historic challenges of so much damage to the infrastructure, working 24/7, hundreds of extra crews brought in, but the attitude, right? Like every time we made a point as well, anytime whether they were in our area or not, because we were kind of getting around and trying to do some storytelling in different areas, we'd make it a point to roll down the windows and just say thank you. And they always had such a positive attitude, you know? And I think that was so amazing, such a testament to the quality of these heroes, as far as I'm concerned.
You know, there was another crew that we got to talk to that pulled in for a few minutes into the parking lot, and they were a county crew. And they were basically following PGE around. Like I said, every road here had major trees down, huge trees. And they had to remove those trees before PGE could do their work.
Yeah.
They were working incredibly long hours. And they, of course, will still be working long hours in the cleanup. And they were tired.
Yeah.
You know, when you've talked to them, they were tired, but they're like, you know, here we are. We've never seen anything like this. And we're just going to work to get everyone back online. So, and even, you know, we have a, what do you call that across the street? It's like a hub for Direct Link. It's right across the street. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our internet was down, and yeah. I know, heard a lot of complaints online, but we saw them. I mean, they were back and forth, and they were eventually, well, within a day or so, they had a generator out here to run the equipment so everyone could have internet in this area. But a generator takes gas. So every, you know, like three or four times a day, someone's out here filling that, you know, from Direct Link, and they worked tirelessly as well.
Wow.
I mean, there's just so many people doing so many different things.
Yeah.
That we're able to just watch out of our little RV.
Yeah. Love it. Bringing the story to a close on a very positive note, I think last week, I think it was Friday, you guys hosted Arlene Anderson and her crew with Arlene Cuisine and kind of did a little bit of a community picnic. I think all the juice was back on for your community, for you guys by then, but just sort of a celebration of that, I guess, and a chance to really get a nice hot meal that was free. You know, they were accepting donations or whatnot, but tell us about how that went.
It was actually
last
Wednesday, and
okay,
most of the people had power. I went around and was chatting with people that were in line, and there were still a few that showed up that still were without power. It was neat seeing, you know, out here is the forge that
Olven Forging.
And so Dan Olven's the president of that. And, you know, he took a big part in pitching in. And a lot of his employees were dropping in just to encourage people. You know, we had several from 91. We had the principal from 91 and his family come. And so, you know, it was any kind of the institutions of the community here had some kind of representation. Mm-hmm.
The Meads from Whiskey Hill Kennels and Arabians came, and they had a lot of damage on their property. I didn't contact them to like specifically kind of sponsor. I was trying to just contact a few businesses to see if they would be interested, because Arlene in her kind heart
she's amazing,
does all of this stuff, but there is a financial it costs money to feed people, and and she takes that on herself, but she says it just works out. I kind of wanted to make sure that it worked out a little bit better maybe than just covering the cost. And it really was amazing. And so our cousins from Lenhart Air Park contributed, and then the Meads from they ended up coming across the street, and it was kind of like, you should have called us. I'm like, well, I just wanted you to come eat. But anyway, so it really was amazing. We had about 90 people come through, and there was food for more, but I think I tried to communicate, get it out, the word out, but it was awesome. Arlene is amazing. The food was wonderful. We had a few neighbors stayed until into the evening, and we had a fire pit going, and it did turn into a more of a celebratory atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And just a lot of people talking and people reconnecting, like, I haven't seen you in years. So it was like, it was a little taste of what we hope this corner becomes in the future.
That's awesome. And I also love, like, it has the feel of a very, like, end of a J.R.R. Tolkien book or something, where it ends with a big feast and you've got the dwarves and the elves, but in your guys' case, it's the Lenhearts and the Meads and the Olvids and all that stuff. All coming back together. Cool. Well, before we let you go, I'd love to just hear how things are going. Obviously, when we had you on the show in the past, it's been to talk about your work with the 91 store. The ice storm kind of took most of our time this time, but I'd love to maybe get a brief update on how things are going. It's definitely been a few months, I believe, since we last checked in.
Yeah. Well, we've been plowing our way through the...
Literally.
Yeah, the final bureaucratic processes. So... last time we talked to you, I think we had permits submitted, and
yeah,
we were still, that has gone through the whole, you know, Christmas season through January, now here through February. We believe we've come to resolution on some final issues and
21 weeks, but who's counting?
21 weeks, but we're hoping that, it can be actually, we can pay for it and it gets submitted or handed to us next week. So
this week, it's Sunday.
That's right. This week.
That's great. Hey, at least it wasn't 91 weeks. I mean, that they might've done that just to.
Oh my word.
Wow. Right? Just to.
That's true.
Fit your brand. So. Yeah.
But we've taken the, you know, belief that, hey, everything's going to start rolling. So we actually have the excavator dropped off equipment Friday, and he's supposed to start first thing tomorrow morning. Or start digging out for the foundation for the new.
A lot of the work that you guys have been doing, then it's just been the prep, the demo, the cleaning, and just kind of getting ready for the building once those permits get cleared.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we needed the permit really to build a new house. We can inside the store. And, you know, through the winter, we spent a lot of time just, I seem to transfer from jacking up the building on the outside to going inside and fixing some structural things and squaring the building back up and again, putting it back on a much more secure foundation. And I think we're right.
When you say a much more secure foundation, you mean a foundation of which there really wasn't one. Yeah.
A foundation and in other places, people after moved were trying to open up the space and they were removing walls and not paying attention that they had removed a structural wall that was, you know, causing the building to sag really badly inside. So, that has a nice big post and beam under it now, like it should have. And, so we feel a lot better about just, you know, it's got a good set of bones now, and now we're looking much more at, okay, starting to put finishes, you know, back together, starting to restore some of the historic beadboard and some of the, you know, okay, you know, get, you know, wiring fixtures back in and those kind of things. So that's going to be taken off over the next few months. So.
That's great. That's great. Your vision is still pretty similar to what we've talked about in the past, as far as a store, a type of diner, drive up coffee window, a part of it being, I believe maybe the dining area being a little bit of a classroom theme, back to the original use of the building. And then the residence that you mentioned where you guys would live and also host a B&B at times.
Yes.
Yep.
That's it.
Awesome. Do we have a time frame yet? Or are we, I think I'm remembering the last time we talked, I remember it very clearly because I finished up the story and posted it the night that my kids and I went to the Clackamas County drive-thru that was at the fairgrounds in Canby, which was the week before the wildfires. And so since we last talked, we've had the wildfires and then the storm. So maybe you guys aren't going to give me a timeline just because who knows, right?
We had been telling everybody we wanted to start Labor Day weekend. I wanted to coincide with 91 schools, start of their, you know, 21-22 school year.
Yeah.
But with the, building permit taking so much longer than maybe what we had envisioned, We are definitely squeezed on that timeline. So I won't promise Labor Day weekend anymore. Yeah. So I definitely want it to be this fall. You know, so we will see.
Yeah, when Christmas came and went with no permits, because that was about 12 weeks, we thought, well, Labor Day is probably not feasible. And now eight or nine more weeks have gone by. So Labor Day, I don't know. We'll see what the Lord does. I mean, we've got our subs, you know, we're acting as our own general contractors. So we've got people lined up. And I mean, we could have the perimeter of our foundation poured by this time next week. Mm-hmm. And you know, hopefully it'll just kind of take off from there.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you guys so much for taking time out to talk to us today. Wish you all the best and what's happening over there. Before you go, would you like to let people know where they can join the community and follow your progress online?
Sure. Well, thank you also for contacting us again and for your coverage of the historic events of the last couple of weeks.
So sick of that word, right?
Yeah.
I've been telling people I want to get back to precedented. I want to have 3 months where everything that happens has already happened, like hundreds of times. I want that for a while.
Yeah. But I know for you and your family, it just is like, has been an especially crazy time because you were without power too. So, but still plugging along. So thank you.
Absolutely.
From our community. And if anyone is interested in following our journey, we're on Facebook and Instagram. And we still don't have a website. And YouTube is just turning out to be a lot of work. So that doesn't happen very much either. But there are few things. If you Google Whiskey Hill Store, you should be able to find us.
All right. Awesome. And it's the only one. You're not going to wind up in the wrong place. So Whiskey Hill Store.
Whiskey Hill, other things. But right. You might find like Whiskey Hill Winery and you can visit them too. They would appreciate that.
Yeah. They're fantastic people over there as well. Awesome. Well, Len Hartz, thank you again. Take care. And again, best of luck with your work.
Thank you.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company.
Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.